Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With Dr. Lara Greaves from the University of Auckland. Morena, Lara, how are you?
Morena, good, thanks. I hope everyone had a good Easter.
Yeah, nice long weekend. It's always a bit of a crunch back into work, but it's been a big week. We're talking about the Trans-Tasman bubble, I guess, first off the bat, because that's the big news. Now, there's been, a lot of speculation about this pretty much since the pandemic started. When will we be able to get to Australia and vice versa? Mostly, this seems to be pretty well regarded, the way that the bubble's been set up. Are there anything that, like, sticks out to you off the bat that is a concern or perhaps something that you think is being done well? What's your initial response to the news about the bubble?
Well, I think it's really great because I think a number of New Zealanders have sort of whānau in Australia, like most of us it seems, and those connections with them are quite important to a range of people. I mean, a lot of people want to go see kids, grandkids, and all of those sorts of connections, so it was important to put in place. I think that there's sort of still a bit of risk here, and I think that this needs to be communicated really well around if there is a local outbreak. I've seen a bit on the internet coming through around, like, oh, who pays for MIQ then, or what situation people will be in. I think a lot of people would be quite mad if they did end up in a situation where they had to, like, say, pay for quarantine, or they ended up stuck somewhere, or something along those lines happened. So I think the sort of risk and the communication of risk needs to be really clear, that people are potentially, if this happens, then this happens. If this happens, then this happens. So people are kind of have that sort of informed consent going into travelling to Australia, and then that, because that presents a bit of a risk of that sort of negative media-related stuff for Ardern. And, of course, there are risks there to that trans-Tasman relationship as well. So hopefully it'll all go quite smoothly and all kind of go to plan overall.
It is coming around very quickly. I think it's the 19th of this month that it all sort of kicks off. Do you think we've got enough time between now and then for ironing out those issues?
I hope that we do, and I hope that they've been thinking about it and planning it for the last few months, because we first kind of talked about this, I think it was about December when they said, oh, we'll announce some details in January, and we never quite got it. So hopefully a lot of that stuff got put in place then. I know a lot of the stuff around sort of building and preparing the airport and there being sort of safe green zones and different rows and keeping sort of the things like the air conditioning separate from the sort of COVID, potential COVID cases, all that kind of separate. I know that was being put in place and has been put in place and planned out. So hopefully all of this has been as well. I see that Western Australia, though, that there's kind of a question mark over whether Western Australia is included in this bubble. So we'll kind of see what happens right there and happens in those spaces. Our sort of relationship with Australia there.
Yes, it is an interesting one. We've also got relationships with the Pacific as well, in much the same way that you were saying, you know, lots of whānau, lots of direct relationships in terms of it being part of the realm of New Zealand, a lot of it, the Cook Islands especially. What should we be doing about the travel bubble there? There's a lot of people saying that should have been perhaps the first off the bat, and we did in fact hear conversations about that seem to have been parked. What's going on there, do you think?
I think we've got quite a few issues there, right? So we kind of view ourselves kind of like sort of the big sister in the Pacific, don't we? So if we have a situation where COVID happened to get to one of the Pacific Islands, they don't have that health infrastructure and sort of contact tracing and all of that in place in the way that Australia and New Zealand do. And I think we sort of saw that with the measles outbreak in Samoa, that can have really horrible consequences. I think there'd be, a bit of hesitancy around that, just given the potential for spread, like, say, from Australia to New Zealand to there, and the issues related with that. So I think that that's potentially coming. And I know, like, sort of, we need to be thinking as well around the vaccine rollout in the Pacific as well, as sort of being a responsible neighbour there.
Yes. Well, while we're just talking about the vaccine, very briefly, what are your thoughts about this? Because we're also seeing a bit of criticism that it's been slow to roll out here in New Zealand. And of course, now that we're, you know, broadening our bubble, I guess, to Australia as well, people are quite rightly asking, you know, should we be getting this sped up at this point? There has been some actions put in place in the last couple of days by the Ministry of Health to make sure that we do have a higher rate of vaccination. But what do you think? Do you think it is a fair concern that it's not fast enough at the moment?
I think so. We're starting to get the data on this, and they seem to be meeting or pretty much just below what their own targets are for this. I think that a slow rollout is positive in that, right? Because people who are hesitant will see more people that they know getting vaccinated and be able to turn around and go, was it all good? And they go, yeah, it's all good. It was fine. Like, said, sore arm, I'm fine, that kind of thing. So I think there's positives in the slow rollout. That is quite a massive undertaking if you think of all of the people that you need to train and kind of keeping the vaccine at the right temperature for, you know, there's a certain amount of days and all that sort of stuff that you need to do. So I think that at this point, it's something that's quite easy to criticise, but logistically it is a huge nightmare. And I think they're actually doing fairly well on balancing that at this point in time. We'll see when the broader it opens up to the broader population what happens there, because I think that that has the capacity to kind of, for there to be more like, oh, he got it before me, those sorts of complaints.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll watch that space, I guess. Let's talk a little bit about some really sad news, actually, that's just come out of Parliament this week, that Kiritapu Allen from the Labour Party has got stage 3 cervical cancer. That's come as quite a big shock to a lot of people, I'm sure to Kiritapu herself. And it's kind of, I guess, caused a bit of a push for HPV self-testing to start. Now, this is something that a lot of Māori health experts have been pushing for a while. It's also something that a lot of experts in women's health have been also pushing for too. What do you think, I guess, should be the next stage for this kind of thing? Because we have these conversations sporadically about how underfunded or perhaps under-supported things around cervical cancer are here in New Zealand. What do you reckon at this juncture?
Yeah, so it looks like the HPV self-testing, all of the experts are saying we need to get it, all the Māori health experts are saying that we need to get it, you know, and the people who are sort of linked into communities, and the rates of Māori, Wahine Māori, getting and dying from cervical cancer are just horrendous. So I think that this is what experts are saying, this is what sort of the academic literature is saying, so I think we need to do it. It's a better test as well, and that's just kind of like part of moving forward. I think the other issue, I was just looking at some of the vaccination rates for the HPV vaccine, and we are sort of, I think we had 67% coverage, but we need to be between 75 and 80%. And Australia is doing a lot better than us. Australia is up at the 75-80%. So that's another area where we kind of need a more kind of concerted effort, is getting proper vaccine coverage for that, to try and knock out cervical cancer in the younger groups, and for the sort of older groups, definitely having that self-test. It's again one of those things that's so frustrating in government and policy making, when all of the evidence is pointing towards something and nothing happens.
Could you just maybe walk us through a little bit, why is it that Māori health experts particularly are really keen on this one? Because I know there's kind of like a cultural resonance for that too. Can you maybe talk through that a little bit for us, Lara?
Yeah, so what a lot of that work has shown is that, like, Māori women are more likely to be, like, whakamā, or, like, embarrassed or kind of ashamed of the whole testing experience, and that some Wahine Māori would view the sort of womb as uterus as sacred, so, or the tapu, so not really wanting to get in there and have that done. So there's research around that, and of course there's all of the sort of discrimination in healthcare, and we've also got sort of a higher rate of there being sexual assault survivors in Māori communities. So then that has there's a lot of potential creation of trauma experiences there with that quite invasive test.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk finally, just briefly, about the light rail project out to Mangere, which has been another thing that's come in and out of the political cycle over the last few years frequently. It's kind of getting some more concrete plans now, which are mostly well received, but there have been some big concerns from groups in Mangere who are worried about the potential for very rapid gentrification to the area, and how that might affect Māori and Pacifica groups particularly, who are highly populated there. What are your thoughts around it? Do you think this is a good thing that we're getting light rail out there? Do you think we need to be a bit more hesitant? Do we need more representation on the board? What's your reckons?
Yeah, it's going to be quite a while before any of this actually gets put in place. It's called Labour kind of feel like they have to do this now, because New Zealand First is sort of running around near the end of the last term saying, hey, we are the handbrake on things such as light rail. And so Labour now has this sort of huge mandate to do whatever they want, and they kind of need to move on this. And we need some kind of light rail or better public transport out to the airport to sort of become that next level kind of proper city. So someone's going to have to sort of lose out in all of this, though, because we've seen with the sort of city rail link, the situation where businesses get sort of semi shut down, even though they're open, with all of the big boards up everywhere and all the roadworks everywhere and people getting frustrated. So someone along the construction route is going to have like a few years of suffering. That's just how that's going to work. And then we don't really know what the effect of will be on communities longer term there. So I guess that's just a case of making sure that sort of representatives of different areas are heard and kind of figuring out what the solution is, because there's just going to be a bit of pain involved in constructing it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Dr. Lara Greaves. It's always awesome to have you on the show. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Thank you.
Ka kite.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.
With